chapter 40. This is a chapter that gives us in somewhat detail the release of Jeremiah from imprisonment. And you'll notice in verse 1 that they said the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord. Actually, we'll go into other chapters before we begin to get any message that is actually a message from this prophet himself. There'll be a word, in a sense, from the Lord through Nebuzaradan about the condition, but actually this gives us a historical record of some occurrences and events that will lead up to then prophecy and the word that will be given from the Lord. So it's not a message as such in this that we would actually just want to look into detail and see a specific message in this particular chapter. That does not mean there's not word from the Lord, in that there'll be a message to come in the chapters that will follow. We may want to, as we look into these closing chapters of this book, condense some of the chapters into one study, because a lot of it is just a historical record that gives us the occurrence of events in the land that will lead up to an ultimate departure from the land into Egypt. It's strange how folk that get wavered from the Lord continue to go astray. With all that has happened now up to this time, and we'll notice the conspiracy has made known to Gedaliah, but he'll not believe it, that there are those that are going to take his life and ultimately will lead even that remnant that is left in the land out of the will of God. And the folks will follow. You'd think by this particular time that those that were left in the land, those that had had opportunity now to, as the Bible said, the poor that were left in the land, and they were given vineyards and orchards and given places of agriculture, that they would thank the Lord and be glad to stay there. But a wayward people are very hard to turn around. They seemingly just do not have any spiritual insight and discernment, and they've totally forgotten the promises that were made by this nation to the Lord at Mount Sinai, all that the Lord says we'll do. In fact, it might be said just the opposite. Everything the Lord says, they'll depart from. And that seems to be the occurrence that of this people now. I just mentioned it in passing that actually one of the most difficult things and virtually impossible things to do is to turn an apostate church around. When they have departed willingly from the things of God, they seem to just continually go away. People today, sometimes we assume that folks are in ignorance. And in a sense, they are. But by and large, folks are liberal today because they want to be liberal. They like that approach. I remember talking with a fella over here in the area of Braun Station. As first with him, he was in the church, and he said, our church is of a moderate theology, and said, I like that. If a fella tells you he's moderate, that means he's liberal. He's moderate because that's what he likes to think. He's standing on good solid ground, but he's not even a moderate. If he were actually a moderate, would not be on solid ground. But nobody likes the label of liberal, so we'll call it a moderate. But yet, when he says he's moderate, he's liberal to the core. And his position was, I like that. And by and large, that's the way it is. And it seems as though Israel, in spite of all that's going on, they still lack their worship of the false gods. They lack their position away from the Lord. As they think, like their liberty, because they're not bound to the things of God. But yet they face tragedy and ultimately will. And this chapter leads up to, and it actually begins a historical account of occurrences that are going to be carried on here for a time. So we'll look at chapter 40. And basically it divides into three divisions. In verses 1 through 6, we find Jeremiah's release and his opportunity. And then we see in verses 7 through 12 the outcast that returned to Gedaliah. And then in verses 13 through 16 we find an unheeded message. But we'll look at it in that light in just a moment. So the word that came to Jeremiah from the Lord, after that Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, had let him go from Ramah, when he had taken him, being bound in chains among all that were carried away captive to Jerusalem, are of Jerusalem and Judah, which were carried away captive unto Babylon. And the captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, The Lord thy God hath pronounced this evil upon this place. Now the Lord hath brought it, done according as he hath said, because ye have sinned against the Lord and have not obeyed his voice, therefore this thing is come upon you. Now behold, I loose thee this day from the chains which were upon thine hand. If it seem to come with me to Babylon, come. And I will look well unto thee, but if it seem ill unto thee to come with me unto Babylon, forbear. Behold, all the land is before thee. Whether it seemeth good and convenient for thee to go thither. Now while he was not yet gone back, he said, Go back also to Gedaliah the son of Jehoiakim, the son of Shaphan, whom the king of Babylon hath made governor over the cities of Judah, and dwell with him among the people, or go whithersoever it seemeth convenient unto thee to go. So the captain of the guard gave him victuals and a reward, and let him go. Then said Jeremiah to Gedaliah the son of Ahikam to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people that were left in the land. Now when all the captains of the forces which were in the fields, even they and their men, heard that the king of Babylon had made Gedaliah the son of Ahikam governor in the land, and had committed unto him men and women, children, and of the poor of the land, all them that were not carried away but captive to Babylon, then they came to Gedaliah to Mizpah, even Ishmael the son of Nethaniah, and Johanan, and Jonathan sons of Kareah, and Sariah the son of Tanhumath, and the sons of Ephiah the Isophathite, and Gazaniah the son of a Makathite, they and their men. And Gedaliah the son of Ahikam the son of Shaphan swear unto them and to their men, saying, Fear not to serve the Chaldeans, dwell in the land, and serve the king of Babylon. It shall be well with thee. As for me, behold, I will dwell at Mizpah to serve the Chaldeans, which will come unto us. But ye gather ye wine and summer fruits and oil, and put them in your vessels, and dwell in your cities that you have taken. Likewise, when all the Jews that were in Moab, and among the Ammonites and Edom, and that were in all the countries, heard that the king of Babylon had left a remnant of Judah, that he had sent over them Gedaliah the son of Ahikam the son of Shaphan, even all the Jews returned out of all places whither they were driven, and came to the land of Judah, to Gedaliah, unto Mizpah, and gathered wine and summer fruits very much. Moreover, Johanan the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces that were in the field, came to Gedaliah to Mizpah, and said unto him, Dost thou certainly know that Baalish the king of the Ammonites hath sent Ishmael the son of Nethaniah to slay thee? Gedaliah the son of Ahikam believed them not. Then Johanan the son of Kareah spake to Gedaliah and Mizpah secretly, saying, Let me go, I pray thee. I will slay Ishmael the son of Nethaniah, and no man shall know it. Wherefore should he slay thee, that all the Jews which are gathered unto thee shall be scattered, and the remnant in Judah perish? Gedaliah the son of Ahikam said unto Johanan son of Kareah, Thou shalt not do this thing, for thou speakest falsely of Ishmael. Just the name Ishmael ought to have warned this king, but it did not, or this governor. But nonetheless, let's look back now in the chapter as we've given. In verses 1 through 6, we find the release of Jeremiah. We had already noted that, but actually goes into more intense detail in this particular chapter that's before us. We'll notice that actually he's taken out of the prison, and he's brought with the other captives, or those that are taken captive in the fall of Jerusalem, and those that had already fallen to the hand of the Chaldeans to be carried away to Babylon. He is brought along with them, and he's bound actually in chains, or as we think of it in our terms today, much like the old chain gangs that used to work on the road. They're chained together, they're bound, and they're ready to be carried into captivity. And Jeremiah is numbered among them. Apparently, he was just taken out of the prison, bound along with the rest of them, and brought to Ramah. But there, Nebuzaradan, the captain of the guard, remember we noted this fellow last week, he was one of the major bodyguards of Nebuchadnezzar. He was in a place of great responsibility and a man that was very capable. And he's given the charge to take care of things in the city of Jerusalem and in the country of Judah. As Nebuchadnezzar would go back to Babylon, leave him as he would do the mopping up and all the final details and set things right in the land. And he's the one that has the responsibility to take care of Jeremiah and to release him. And verses 2 and 3, we find Nebuchadnezzar as he gives his evaluation of the situation in the area. And his evaluation is correct. In a sense, this could be considered a word from the Lord through this man to Jeremiah, that he might encourage Jeremiah, and that God has simply brought his word to pass. We said the captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, "The Lord thy God hath pronounced this evil upon this place. Now the Lord hath brought it and done according as he hath said. Because you have sinned against the Lord and have not obeyed his voice, therefore this thing has come upon you." And in that sense, there is a message to Jeremiah from the Lord, but it comes to Nebuchadnezzar. And you'll notice this man is not even a believer. He said to Jeremiah, "The Lord your God." But yet he is capable and able to discern that this is a hand of God's judgment upon a people. And he points out, Jeremiah speaks to him and said, "God brought it to pass." Now this is the very thing that Jeremiah had warned the children of Judah about for quite some time, that it is going to occur, that there will be a final fall and a devastation. And so that's the evaluation of the case. Because of their sin against the Lord and their rebellion against the Lord, then this has come to pass. Now we notice Jeremiah is his bonds are loosed in verse 4. This Nebuchadnezzar sets him at liberty. "Now behold, I loose thee this day from the chains that which were upon thine hand." And then he points out, "If it seem good unto thee to come with me to Babylon, come. I will look well unto thee." He's set free by this man in authority. And he's given a golden opportunity. Remember, Jeremiah has been charged with rebellion against the children of Israel, against the family of Judah and the country of Judah. He was charged with conspiracy to overthrow that government. And yet now he's given opportunity to live, if you please, basically at ease for the rest of his life, if he so chooses to do so. And yet he'll choose to still identify with God's people in their place of judgment, rather than go to Babylon. So he's given a golden opportunity today. And let me say this, that God calls a man, and in the process of time, that man may be given opportunity to promote himself or to be far better off financially than he is in the ministry, and that becomes a difficult choice. And yet, it ought not be a difficult choice. But in the case of Jeremiah, he's offered something here. This Nebuchadnezzar, I mean, a man in authority. Now, he's not just speaking light words. He has the wherewithal. He has the king's authority to do what he says he'll do. And he said, "I've loosed you from the bonds that were upon your hands." In other words, you're free, Jeremiah, with no strings attached. You're free. "And if it seem good unto thee to come with me to Babylon, then come, and I will look well unto thee." I mean, that's sufficient to say. He's saying that basically this man could go into retirement for the rest of his life. He can live at ease in Babylon. This man would see to it. This was the word of Nebuchadnezzar. You just take care of Jeremiah. And so he's given opportunity to live relatively at ease if he so desires. To live at ease. This is a choice that this man of God must make. The opportunity is given, and yet Moses was in a position much like this, and the Bible said he chose rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. There will be oftentimes opportunity that is given that is not of the Lord. It's very hard sometimes to discern that whenever we might have lived in straits and had lived in adverse conditions. And there seems to be a great opposition to the ministry. Sometimes it seems like this would be the thing to do. I remember hearing the story of the preacher that pastoring the small church and struggling. And he got word from a large county seat church that they wanted him. And he said to his wife, he said, "You go pack, I'll pray." And that's many times a decision that's made. And this man could have simply packed and prayed and gone to Babylon, and Nebuchadnezzar would have taken responsibility for him and said, "I'll look well to thee." Could have taken care of him, would have taken care of him. This is, again, the authority given this man. And Jeremiah is given the opportunity. So we see his release and his opportunity. Then on the other hand, he said, "Or you can stay behind. You can stay behind." But if it seem ill unto thee to come with me unto Babylon, forbear. Behold, all the land is before thee, whether it seemeth good and convenient for thee to go, go thither. Or just anywhere in the land you can go. Now here's a land that's relatively desolate, and he could have gone out and chose the best farm in the land, and I mean, it's there before him. The land's before him. That's the opportunity that he has. And then he said, now while he was not yet gone back, or Jeremiah hadn't left, and neither had Nebuzaradan, he said, go back also to Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam. In other words, you can go to the governor if you want to. And this is the choice that Jeremiah will make. He goes to the place that he feels he could best serve the people that he's ministered to. And that's the whole heart of the ministry now is to serve where we feel like we can do the most good. Be in the place that would be usable in the hand of God. Opportunity for wealth is not really the issue. Very frankly, as John said, this world will pass away with the lust thereof. That includes everything in it. The gold and the silver, the bank accounts, all that one day will fade into oblivion. I don't say it just because I've never had great wealth, because I never have, but very frankly, the farther I go, the more I see that only the things of God are important in this land. Everything else becomes very insignificant. And yet we notice that Jeremiah has an opportunity, but he makes the choice. I hear this, Nebuchadnezzar, you can go even with the governor. Just live with him if you want to. And that's the decision that this man of God will make. He can go where he wants to. Verse 5. Go wheresoever it seemeth convenient unto you to go. So the captain of the guard gave him victuals and a reward and let him go. Gave him some money. Gave him food. And just said, you can go where you want. You're released. With no strings attached. Then we notice verse 6. Then went Jeremiah unto Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, to Mizpah, and dwelt with him among the people that were left in the land. Now you talk about a man that has a heart for a people. Now Jeremiah does. It's not any wonder that he's known as the weeping prophet and a concerned man of God because he goes where the people are. I find a tendency among people today to want to isolate themselves. And as we visit, we find that attitude that don't bother me. I want to be isolated. I want to be away from people. And yet we need to be among the folks, be among the people. That's where Jeremiah chose to be. He stays with the people, verse 6. He does not go to Babylon. He doesn't go out and isolate himself out in the country. But rather he makes his way to Gedaliah, to the governor, and to the place of the center of business. And there he identifies himself again with the people that were left in the land, the place where he can serve the Lord and bring honor to the name of the Lord God of Israel. So Jeremiah, we see his release and then his opportunities. And he avails himself of the opportunity that will actually be of eternal consequence. If he'd have made his choice to go to Babylon, I'd say we'd never heard much more of him, if anything. We would have, if he'd just chosen to isolate himself, very little would be said of him. But here he is, he identifies with the people again, and I'm sure at the judgment seat of Christ, it'll stand rewarded in the time that is to come before us. He made the choice that would be contrary to what the world would normally make, and yet we are assured from the study of the Word of God, he made the right choice. Because he served the Lord who loved him and even called him before he was born to a ministry that would magnify the name of the Lord. Then we find in verses 7 through 12 the outcasts that are round about that now return to Gedaliah. There's a number of folks that were never actually completely subdued by Nebuchadnezzar. Individuals that were never really subdued by him. There were some apparently that were still out in the fields in remote areas. They hid themselves in an obscure manner. Some time ago, well, I guess it's been 6-8 years ago now, maybe even 10. Time seems to have a way of getting away from us. But there was a Japanese soldier that was found in the Philippines that had lived for years. What was it, 40 years when they found him? He didn't know the war was over. Still hiding in obscurity. That's an extreme case, but there were soldiers of Israel that were still hiding out in the hidden areas. There were certain people that had never actually come completely under the subjection of Nebuchadnezzar. God had given them the land, and that was sufficient. But individually, there were still those. And then there were some that had fled to various countries round about. There were those that had gone to Moab. There were those that had gone among the Ammonites and over into Edom, the descendants of Esau. These at times in times past had been known as the enemies of God. And God's people, yet when the times got so difficult where they were, they went in groups to these varied countries. And so this is a group now that we're discussing for a moment. Those that are left behind. Nebuchadnezzar's army's gone, by and large, the most of it. That's just the cleanup situation afterwards. Preparation to carry a large number of people into captivity. And this is going on. And Gedaliah is made governor in the land. Again, it's a political strategy that this particular man is placed in that place of responsibility. Not a foreign governor, but a governor that is akin to the people. And when they hear that Gedaliah is in the place of governor, then they begin to come out of the woodwork, so to speak. And they begin to return. And they heard that a remnant was left. Thank God for the remnants. God always had a way of leaving a remnant for His people. It seems sometimes that His judgment would be in total, but always He leaves a remnant. And He left even a remnant in the land. This group today that believes that all of the tribes of Israel are totally lost and England and the United States have become Israel, they fail to understand the Word of God. God, by and large, had them all, or the greater majority, carried into Babylon. But He still left some in the land. There's a remnant that stayed behind. So there would have been a nation of Israel had there not even been a return. I mean, God has a remnant, has a place. These that were in the outlying countries and in the hidden areas, they heard that the remnant was left, and they began to show up. Now, they're afraid of the Chaldeans as they come back. This is one of the issues, is their fear of the Chaldean army and what will occur. And Gedaliah, as a governor, and a rightful governor, and a good governor, I think, he said, "I'll stay in Mizpah and represent you, and I'll deal with the Chaldeans. You go on and take up the farming and the land and be productive and prosper. And they may harvest to the increase of the land," and they do so. God is gracious in spite of all of His judgment. He's given the increase of land. Here are folks that have now the opportunity to go back and to even harvest a crop. You talk about God in His graciousness, His goodness to mankind. Mankind, even at his worst and under the judgment of God, God still shows mercy. God always tempers His judgment with mercy. And here is a governor that's placed in a place, and he said, I'll represent you. I'll take care of it. Don't fear the Chaldean army. Just go back and gather the increase." That's what he said to him. Verse 10 says, "For me, behold, I will dwell at Mizpah to serve the Chaldeans, which will come unto us. But ye, gather you wine and summer fruits and oil, and put them in your vessels. Dwell in your cities that ye have taken, or in the place that you choose to dwell and serve, to labor." He said, "I'll serve you. I'll see to it that the Chaldeans don't bother." He said, "Don't fear them." And then, likewise, when all the Jews that were in Moab and Ammon, they were among the Ammonites and in Edom, and when all the countries heard that the king of Babylon had left a remnant of Judah, that he had set over them Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, even all the Jews returned out of all places whither they were driven, and came to the land of Judah, Gedaliah, to Mizpah, and gathered wine and summer fruits very much. God, in His goodness, let them return. And these outcasts come back. Now, in this group that returns, there's always the presence of the enemy. And this enemy is to destroy, actually get alive, because from all indications, he would have been a good governor. He would serve the people. Jeremiah's there from a spiritual standpoint, Gedaliah's there from a political standpoint, and things would have been well. God would have allowed them to stay in the land, this remnant, and allowed them to labor there for the 70 years before the return. But always in the backside, there's the enemy. I tell you today that very frankly we see in this Ishmael, the ever-present enemy. The Bible speaks of him who is as a roaring lion walking about seeking whom he may devour. There's always an enemy that would destroy the work of God. And in this set of circumstances, there's a conspiracy that is made to slay Gedaliah, because there's a desire ultimately behind the scenes in the finality of it. Actually, the Ammonites are behind it, but they're instruments in the hand of another power. who wants to eliminate from the land this people and ultimately destroy them. Because, you see, there had been a promise that was made that of the seed of Abraham there would be a blessing to all nations. Satan's well aware of that promise made to Abraham, and every effort is made to even destroy this small remnant now that could have stayed in the land. And so there's a message that is given to this man Gedaliah, and the tragedy is that he does not heed that message. Now, it's just a few points I want to make about an unheeded message in verses 13 through 16. In verse 13, we'll find that Gedaliah was forewarned. It said, "Moreover, Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captain's forces that were in the fields came to Gedaliah to Mizpah, and said unto him, Dost thou certainly know that Baalish, the king of the Ammonites, hath sent Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah, to slay thee?" In other words, he's warned. He's definitely forewarned in this particular case that there is a conspiracy. And the message is given. There's danger of an endangering of your life. Your life is to be taken. And beyond that, he understood this message. Verse 14. In other words, he understood the wording of that message. He said, "But Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, believed them not." He understood the wording of it, but he simply refused to believe it. Now, there is a parallel that you'll see as we go along here, that there needs to be a forewarning. And there are folks that will understand the wording of the message, but they simply will not believe it. I see today a generation of people that are growing up without early exposure to the gospel. And one of the things that you'll see coming out of that is a total disbelief. It's very difficult to convince folks sometimes of the truth of the presence of the person of Jesus Christ. And you rob your children and your grandchildren if you do not teach them early the things of God. Here's a man, he's forewarned, he understands the wording of the message, but he simply just refuses to believe it. And so consequently, there's going to come a tragedy from this. I was just reading the story of a man this morning in the city of Dallas, years ago. He is a man that had been exposed to the gospel all of his life. And he was not an atheist, he understood the message. And he himself said on his deathbed, had he just somebody approached him even 3, 2, or 1 month before that, that he would have, somebody had told him he'd die and go to hell, that he would not have believed it. He had said that he would one day be saved. But he was fatally injured in an automobile accident. And as they got him into the hospital, he still had clarity of mind, but because of the circumstances, he was not able to really come to grips with it. He'd been witnessed to. He had heard the message. He'd understood it. And yet, as he'd even talked with the preacher just prior to his death, he said, there's a veil. There's a barrier. And said, "I can't get through it." And ultimately, just at his death, he said, "I'll die and go to hell." So that's sad. That a message is given. It's understood. And then it's just simply put off. And neglected and abused. And this man, Gedaliah, was forewarned. There was death to him, and he understood the message. He just did not believe it. Verses 14 again in verse 16. He said, "But Gedaliah the son of Ahikam said unto Johanan, son of Kareah, thou shalt not do this thing, for thou speakest falsely of Ishmael." Just don't believe this about Ishmael. The man was there to murder him, and we'll find in the study of our coming chapters that he did so. So he just simply refused to believe. Now, every man that hears the message of the grace of God deliberately, blatantly refuses it, will face a God, an angry God one day. There's an offer of grace here. We don't charge or challenge the sovereignty of God in this, but I mean, God offers mercy to a lost world through the offer of His own Son. And here's a man that hears a message, he does not believe it. And Johanan offers to slay Ishmael in verse 15. In other words, he will stand as a protector for this governor, if you just let him. See, then Johanan the son of Kareah spake to Gedaliah, and this was secretly saying, "Let me go, I pray thee, and I will slay Ishmael, the son of Nethaniah. No man shall know it." And he made the offer to assassinate Ishmael. Now, whether it's right or not to assassinate leaders, sometimes the world would be a far better place had there been certain ones that just did not have their place or their life. I cannot help but conceive in my mind that the world would have been a better place had it not been for a Hitler. Or Mussolini, or what was his hero, Toto, or what's his name, Bobby? The Japanese emperor. These fellows that wrought such devastation in World War II, I guarantee you, you can't see where they did any good as they went through. Well, Ishmael was one that Johanna said, I'll take care of it if you'll just let me, give me the word, and I'll slay him secretly, and your life will be spared. And the tragedy of this man's death is that it's going to affect a lot of folks. The offer is made to slay this Ishmael by Johanna. He said, wherefore should he slay thee, that all the Jews which are gathered unto thee should be scattered, and the remnant of Judah perish? In other words, here's a man that is in a place of focus. He's in the center of attention. Yet lies a man that stood in the place and be the representative to the Chaldeans. And if his life is lost, then ultimately there would be a loss of other life and opportunity. Now, very frankly, when this man is assassinated, he's slain, that very thing occurs. Ultimately, there's going to be a group. And the final number of this remnant that are left will be carried into the land of Egypt. And ultimately, they'll be brought out of the land. And supposedly, again, the whole purpose of God will be thwarted. Of course, thank God for His sovereignty that He is able to preserve His own. But every effort is made by the enemy to destroy the man of God. See, an unheeded message. It behooves us today to have an attentive ear and to listen to the warnings that come our way, because not only is our life affected, but Gedaliah's death and his life affects so many others. God has placed you here as an individual. And yet as an individual, there's no telling the outreach that you have. And just your place of service and opportunity, this man Gedaliah was far more effective, I'm sure, than he ever realized, because he was affecting a number of lives. You might think that, well, I'm insignificant, I won't affect very many people. You might be surprised what God will do with you in the place of service. And heed the message and heed the warnings that come our way. We could apply it in a spiritual sense today. From our relationship to the Lord. Don't let Satan come and tempt us to be led away or astray from following the Lord, because we affect a lot of lives. You might be surprised at the lives that you might affect. You may not reach the great number yourself, but you may be the storekeeper, Sunday school teacher that would reach the D.L. Moody, that would preach to the world. And so your life will be an effective life, and it will be an important life. And in this case, here's a man that has the opportunity to heed a message, and yet he simply ignores that message, refuses to believe that folks would take his life. And ultimately, just in the next chapter, we'll find that this warning finds fulfillment of the message that they were seeking in his life. The very man that was named will come and take his life, and ultimately leads into, again, great destruction and devastation, loss of life, and loss of opportunity. Now, God had promised, and God would take care of them in the land, this remnant that's left. But they'll be driven from that land. They'll go down into the place of God's judgment, down into the land of Egypt. God said, don't go to Egypt. That's the last place they need to go. And ultimately, that's the place they wind up, is in the place that they ought not be. And so when the message comes from the Lord, and it was a message from the Lord, we need to heed that message. Ultimately, we wind up in a place we ought not be. As a believer, we might wind up on a shelf. It's not used of God. And the loss of opportunity, the loss of life, as far as affecting him, is for the cause of Christ. On the other hand, as an unsaved person, to not heed the message of warning is to ultimately wind up in a place of separation from God, in a place of judgment, a place called hell. In this chapter, a lot of history here, a lot of just historical facts, but yet there is a message in it. A message that needs to be heeded, and a warning that's given, and an unheeded message leads to the tragedy in the respect of this man and in the lives of others. Any question or any comment now upon that which we've covered thus far?